Welcome to the MS News Today podcast. I'm your host, Jen Powell, and I also have secondary progressive multiple sclerosis. I am a columnist with MS News Today at multiplesclerosisnewstoday.com. Thank you all for listening to this podcast. Let me invite you to join our MS forums. We have over 1,000 active members discussing common themes and sharing their experience on living with multiple sclerosis. Please consider joining. You can find the link to the MS News Today forums in this episode's description. Welcome to the MS News Today podcast. I'm your host, Jen Powell. Today, I have with me someone very special. I have with me Ed Tobias. Ed is the senior patient columnist at MS News Today and creator of the MS Wire blog. When I first came to Multiple Sclerosis News Today, Ed's was the first column I had read. And as a matter of fact, I had read it even prior to joining. Ed, thank you for joining us today.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here, and you're very kind to say nice things. I just do what I do to try and do what help I can be, or be what help I can be. My tongue is getting tired. That shouldn't be the way it is for a former broadcaster, but it happens sometimes.
It does happen, and I can relate to that, and I think our listeners can as well. Your column says the MS Wire, as does your blog. Can you tell our listeners why you chose that name?
Sure. I was in broadcast journalism for my career of more than 40 years. Most of that time was spent with the broadcast division of the Associated Press. And you may know that the Associated Press is known as a news wire, just as United Press International was and Reuters is a wire service. That goes back to the days of telegraphers sending Morse code over wires. And it was just a natural. I try and provide information as well as commentary to my readers, and the information is akin to MS News. So the MS Wire just seemed natural.
I can appreciate that. And also what you bring to the table is something so unique and so integral to our ability to keep abreast of current events, happenings, medications, et cetera, coming through the MS Wire, if you will. And can you explain why that aspect was so important to you to relay to the greater MS community?
Sure. I think that there, unfortunately, is a communication problem within the MS community, and it's not unique to MS. I think it probably is true of any disease. Because doctors are so pressed for time these days, or at least many are, patients don't get to communicate with them well. And it's even more difficult now that we're in the midst of a pandemic that limits the ability of people to see people face to face. So I try and fill that lack of information gap, providing information that patients may not be able to get from their neurologists, and also trying to provide facts in community that, because of social media, has difficulty getting facts. Refer to the dangerous doctor internet, because there's so much information out there that is wrong or misguided. People relay information that they've heard. If you see something online, that starts with a friend told me, or I think I read somewhere that, and then they go on to provide information. You need to guard against that. So I try to provide facts and also provide some advocacy, trying to be a patient's voice to the medical community and the pharmaceutical community as well. For example, I just wrote a column about how there's a dearth of clinical trial information about how disease-modifying therapies impact people who are 50 and older, because there haven't been clinical trials. Older people with MS are, in fact, excluded from most clinical trials, and that puts us at a disadvantage. So my column speaks to that using a Journal of Neurology article as the base of that information.
You bring up such an important point that we simply two aspects I'd like to highlight that there is a dearth of information on the internet and not all of it based in fact. And that can be a very dangerous ground for people seeking help, information, or guidance. And the second being that the ability to connect that person with authoritative content is so integral to our ability to be successful in managing our disease. What do you credit to your ability to manage your disease? And could you tell our listeners what kind of MS you currently have and when you were diagnosed?
Sure. I have secondary progressive MS. I don't know if that was ever put in my record as a formal diagnosis, because it's hard to say, as I think people with MS realize, it's hard to pinpoint when you make a transition from a primary diagnosis such as relapsing remitting, which is now just called relapsing MS, to secondary progressive. I was diagnosed back in 1980. That's so long ago, they didn't even have MRIs to assist with a diagnosis at the time. I knew something was wrong when I returned from a work assignment to the Republican National Convention in Detroit that year. And I just wasn't feeling really up to snuff. I felt a little spacey. I felt that I was tired when I had no reason to be tired. It was difficult to work the convention because of fatigue. And that was strange for me. Combine that with one day I woke up and couldn't squeeze a tube of toothpaste with my left hand. So I knew something was wrong. Now, my wife, who at the time was the chief physical therapist at one of the large university hospitals in Washington, D.C., really diagnosed me before any doctor did. She would see me skiing and couldn't understand why I was getting tired on the slopes when she wasn't, and I shouldn't be getting tired after just a couple of runs. So she combined that with, I guess, a couple of other things that she saw, maybe a little clumsiness with my legs occasionally. When the doctors were scratching their heads, the neurologists were scratching their heads, unable to come up with a diagnosis, she was spot on with the diagnosing me. And then the neurologists after about a year and two different neurologists, finally came around to her diagnosis of MS.
Sometimes it does take someone who sees us on a daily basis to understand the nuances that go on, especially you're speaking in 1980 prior to any true diagnostic tool to be able to give you a diagnosis. What?
Yeah, the diagnostic tools that were used for my diagnosis were evoked potential tests measuring how long it takes current to travel from one part of my body to another, or what my eyesight was seeing or not seeing on an eye evoked potential. There was a lumbar puncture, spinal tap, and there was the technical hot tub test, soaking in a hot tub. I don't think they do that anymore, but soaking in a hot tub in order to see if my legs weakened, and they turned to rubber. So that was definitely a positive test.
And have you found that over the years that you've been able to, I mean, you've been married quite a long time, which is such a testament to anybody these days, but have you found over the years that this disease has had an effect on your relationship with your wife in a general sense? And how have you used or have you come into knowledge of any techniques that have helped strengthen your relationship or helped both of you independently through this journey?
You know, I've been married since 1976. I was diagnosed about 4 years after we were married and a year after our son was born. So we've been together a long time. But people ask me, do you have any tips or hints for success? I'm not sure that I do. I can just tell you our experience. My wife has her own medical issues. Her years as a PT did in her back. She's had several spinal surgeries. So she has her issues. I have my issues. But we understand that we both have issues. So that even though I may want to get angry with her about some things, I understand. And the same with her. I'm very fortunate in that I married a wonderful person who, although she can be impatient with things, particularly with me, she also is understanding. But we have a shared understanding of each other's needs. And I think if there is any reason for our success, that's it. And when I read online in MS chat groups, Facebook groups, of poor people with MS whose spouse just doesn't understand what they're going through. Typically, if it's a woman and her male partner doesn't understand, he expects her to cook and to clean and to have everything shipshape when he gets home from work. But she can't explain to him. And it just troubles me. People say that you can't understand what it's like to have MS unless you have MS. I think people can understand if they're willing to understand and willing to communicate with their partner. And it may be family members, not spouses or partners. It may be mothers, fathers, children. Communicating from the start with people. And it goes to a business relationship as well. Communicating with people who you work with, being upfront about what MS is all about, giving them some resources that they can turn to find out what MS is all about, helps. Fortunately, I didn't have to do that. But if you don't have a spouse, you don't have a wife like mine, sometimes they need little education.
You bring up an important point again about the ability to empathize, have empathy from others, but also with ourselves. I think those of us with MS and other rare disease or any condition, we can be very hard on ourselves with expectations, especially around things that we may or may not be able to do that we once could. How have you managed those within yourself?
I think because my MS progression was slow, took place over 40 years, I was able to gradually adjust. It wasn't a shock to me. When I was first diagnosed, I only had one question. Is this going to shorten my life? My neurologist told me what was the going belief then. And strangely, 40 years later, it still is the going belief. And that is, the average person with MS will have their life expectancy shortened by 6 or 7 years over normal life expectancy. I don't know that that's still the case. I think someone should investigate that if it hasn't been investigated recently, because I think people with MS are surviving a lot longer than they used to. But I'm digressing. And I've also lost my train of thought. Oh, how have I dealt with it? Again, the slow progression made me feel as if this was me. It wasn't a switch that suddenly turned on or turned off. And so I don't play tennis anymore, but I haven't played tennis in quite some time. Do I miss it? A little bit. Do I think about it? No, not unless I pass a tennis court. I am what I am, and I've found that it's better to learn to dance in the rain than to hide from the storm.
I love that saying. I love that saying, and I completely concur. I think if we were to wait for the storm to pass, we would never dance.
Yeah, and you know, I don't like the term fighting with MS. He fought with MS. I don't fight with my MS. I find it's much more productive to live alongside my MS and adjust my life just as I live with my wife. My MS is a part of my family. I live with it. I adjust to it. But I don't try and look at it as an opponent.
That resonates so strongly, as I've heard many people use both phrases. And personally speaking, I much prefer coexisting alongside my MS as an aspect of my life, as it lends, it gives me actually more ability to be Jen as opposed to fighting with something, as I don't find the fight would be conducive to my part of living.
No, we agree.
After you were diagnosed, and being that that was quite some time ago, how long after did you start a disease-modifying therapy? As I can imagine, the disease-modifying therapies of today were not available to you at that time.
There were no disease-modifying therapies available in 1980, and it took almost 20 years for one to be developed, which was Copaxone. Shortly after that came Avonex. I was in the phase 3 clinical trial of Avonex, and the trial was so successful that they shortened the length of the trial, and the FDA approved Avonex quickly. During the trial, as it turns out, I was on the placebo, but I was able to be one of the very first people to have Avonex prescribed as a DMT. And I was on Avonex for a good 10 years, but it's a weekly injection into the thigh, and it didn't take long for me to get needle fatigue. And so my wife would ask me, have you given yourself your shot this week? And I'd tell her, yes, although it had been 10 days since I'd had a shot, sometimes 2 weeks. So finally, I asked her to give me my shot because I couldn't give it to myself any longer. And so I got a shot in the butt once a week for a period of time, but I just couldn't take it any longer. So after about 10 years, I switched to Tysabri. And Tysabri is a monthly infusion. I found that was that fit my lifestyle very well. And it's important, by the way, that any therapy that's being used fit a patient's lifestyle, be it needle fatigue or needing to only be treated once a month because of business considerations or cost considerations. It needs to fit that person's lifestyle, and that's a discussion to have with a neurologist when a DMT is being recommended. So from Avonex to Tysabri, I was on Tysabri for, I guess, about 10 years. First monthly, and then as my titer score increased, putting me at an increased risk of the brain disease PML. As that rose, I dropped back to every other month. And then eventually the titers became too high so that I had to go off of Tysabri. And then I switched to Aubagio. Aubagio was a pill, very easy to take. I've been told that hair loss is one of the side effects of Aubagio, but I never really learned whether the little bit of hair loss I had was from the medication or from just growing older. Aubagio, however, became a cost concern because about a year and a half after I started using Aubagio, I became eligible for Medicare. And going on Medicare changes the whole cost equation because the federal government will not allow a drug manufacturer to supplement the out-of-pocket cost of their medication for someone who is on a program of insurance that's paid for by the government, whether it's Medicare or Medicaid. So I went from having a copay that was very, very small for Aubagio when I was on just commercial insurance to a very large copay for Aubagio when I went on to Medicare, and the drug manufacturer couldn't help me with it. So that required another switch. I went to Lemtrada, probably the best thing I've done, and probably the most effective DMT of the four that I've used. And Lemtrada, because it's an infusion and it's provided in a doctor's office or a hospital or an infusion center, that is paid for 80% by Medicare, and my insurance, co-insurance, picks up the rest of that cost. So although it's tremendously expensive and probably, well, certainly more expensive on a per treatment basis than Aubagio ever was, that gets paid for in total where Aubagio didn't. But Lemtrada, my wife, who I've been talking about, has just come in. So that's because the furniture people are coming, she says.
No so worries.
You can edit that important piece of information.
No problem. Hello, wife.
Out of the recording. She just, the furniture people aren't supposed to be coming for another hour.
So okay.
In any event, she's annoyed now. She doesn't realize that I was just talking on tape about how we understand each other.
You understand each other. That's okay. You know what? I have one too. Not married as long, but 25 years. And
great. Same.
It's okay. Thank you. You're doing great. You can go ahead with Lemtrada when you're ready.
In any event, back to Lemtrada. Lemtrada has improved some of my symptoms to some extent, something that wasn't promised. It also has certainly slowed and possibly stopped my progression. It's over. I haven't had a Lemtrada treatment now for 3 years, and I don't expect to have any more. I think and I hope that it is my last MS medication in my long MS career. So that's the story of my my four meds, like my three sons, my four meds.
Well, with Lemtrada, I hope too that you do not need any more disease modifying therapies. And I would suffice to say you have been through your share of them. In your journey with not only disease modifying therapies, but this disease in general, your wealth of knowledge is quite impressive. And how have you not only accrued and recalled all this with this disease? I have trouble sometimes remembering things. How have you decided to share this information with the greater MS community in hopes that we can all learn from you?
Well, several ways. I've been writing a blog for about 5 or 5.5 years now, and that blog brought me into the BioNews company and its Multiple Sclerosis News Today website, and I write twice a week for MS News Today. The blog and the MS News Today column have sort of merged into one right now. There are some things on the blog that aren't on the MS News Today column site, but they pretty much do mirror each other. The column comes first, and then a version of the column appears on the blog. In addition to that, I do some consulting for some companies that are involved with MS. Full disclosure, I was a paid consultant for the Sanofi Genzyme company that manufactures Lemtrada, appearing on or participating in a patient. Now there's an MS symptom for you. I'm losing my words. A patient panel as they were designing some new patient online material for Lemtrada. I've also done some work for some groups that have created MS websites and applications. And I'm very proud of the fact that this past winter, I published a book called We're Not Drunk, We Have MS. There is a Facebook group with that same name. That's where I got it from, so I want to give them a credit for the idea. But the book goes back to what I said at the beginning of this interview, and that is there's a need particularly for people who have just been diagnosed or who think they have MS-like symptoms to have a combination of someone's experiences along the MS highway combined with factual information about tests, about medications, about how to speak with your neurologist, about how to get help affording medications, how to travel. There's a wealth of information that I've gathered over my 40 plus years with MS that I wanted to share. And so I put the book together. It's available as both a paperback and an ebook on Amazon. And it's also available as an ebook on Apple Books and also a handful of international ebook booksellers.
Congratulations on that. I did have the privilege of reading that, and I can attest to it being an instrumental toolkit, as I like to say, for so many facets of this disease that I did not know. And had I had this when I was first diagnosed, it would have helped me navigate things far easier. So thank you for doing that.
Thank you, Jen. That's a nice plug. My intention, in fact, it's a subtitle, was to write this as a toolkit for people. And I hope that the tools that are in it are useful.
I know they will be. I know they will be. As we conclude this interview, and I appreciate your time, can you share with me anything you wish you knew at the beginning when you were first diagnosed that you now know?
You know, I've been thinking about that question for the past day. And I don't know really what I wish I had known. Because I've been so fortunate in both my friends and my family and my coworkers and my bosses in their understanding of what I needed them to do to help me with my MS, that I didn't really feel that I was blindsided by anything. It's not what I wish I knew, but what I wish I had when I was first diagnosed. I wish I had a medication that I could use to modify the course of the disease rather than having to wait 20 years in which my brain could atrophy, 20 years in which the nerves along my spinal column could short circuit. When I think today how much less my disease might have progressed if I had been treated in 1980 rather than in 1996 or 1998, that is a disappointment. But do I wish I had known something? No, as former Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, to paraphrase him, would have said, I don't know what I don't know.
I like that quote. And I like your addendum. I think that is very profound and something our listeners can identify with, that longing for having wished you had had. As we say goodbye, would you like to leave our listeners with one last thought before we go?
I'll go back to what I said earlier. It's better to learn to dance in the rain than to hide from the storm.
I can't think of any better way to end this interview. And as someone who I know dances in the rain, we appreciate having you, Ed. And our listeners can find Ed's column at multiplesclerosisnewstoday.com, the MS Wire, as well as his blog, the MS Wire, and his book, No, We Are Not Drunk, We Have MS, is available at Amazon, and his link will be available on the description to this podcast. Thank you again, Ed.
Thank you, Jen.
And thank you to all of our listeners at multiplesclerosisnewstoday.com. Share your thoughts on this episode through social media. You can find MS News Today on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Follow us to keep updated on the latest news and to never miss new content and initiatives. Click the links in this episode's description.
The information in our flash briefings and podcasts are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to Multiple Sclerosis News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. Discover more content that might be of interest to you at www.multiplesclerosisnewstoday.com.